It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Ann Strainchamps. This hour, race and justice. This is the sound of a demonstration here in Madison, just a couple of miles from our studio. All week, we've seen protests like this, ever since a white police officer shot and killed an unarmed African-American man, 19-year-old Tony Robinson. Now, Madison is not Ferguson, Missouri. The city has a progressive reputation, good schools, a high quality of life. But for the past couple of years, there have been some intense community discussions here about racial inequities that are hidden in plain sight. And maybe there are some lessons for other predominantly white cities. Steve Paulson sat down this week with Reverend Alex G. He's a community leader who grew up here, and with Erica Nelson, the lead author of a recent report on Madison's racial divide. The subject is personal for both of them. Alex raised his daughter here. Erica's got two biracial kids of her own.
How did each of you first hear about the shooting of Tony Robinson?
I was in Kansas City, Missouri last week for a conference. I was actually there giving a seminar about race relations, and we were actually talking about Ferguson because we were only about 3 hours away. And one of my coworkers sent me a text message and said, "You must not know what's happening in Madison." And so before I could write and ask what, I went to Madison.com, took a look at it, and just said, oh, my gosh, no, not Madison. I can't believe this.
Erica, how did you first hear about this?
Well, I kind of live in the Near East Side neighborhood where the shooting took place, and I just happened to be home with some friends, and they said that there were many, many police cars in the street had been blocked off, and then began to get messages from friends who had said that there was a shooting of a young African-American man and similarly was shocked.
Now, we should point out this is an ongoing investigation. There's only been limited information so far released to the public about the confrontation between Tony Robinson and the police officer who shot him. But what do people around the country need to know about this case at this time?
I think they need to know that people are horrified. Madison's a wonderful community. I've spent the majority of my life here, and this is just something that many of us thought would never and could never happen here.
Right. I mean, this seems like the city that's not like Ferguson, Missouri, the city with the national reputation. You know, it ends up on all these polls as a place that you want to live. We can talk about that reputation,
sure,
but this history of social and political progressivism.
Well, although I found this very difficult to believe, I've had several discussions with community leaders, with the police chief, with other police officers, and I said Madison actually is breeding ground for great disparity. And when you have that level of disparity, it only takes the fear in the heart of someone in leadership or police officer, the cockiness of a young person, and things could just really escalate.
Yeah, I was surprised by the reality of it, right? We are operating from a place of community conversations about race, conversations about policing and institutional and structural racism. Mm-hmm. And then in the midst of all of these conversations and a lot of positive progress, we have this event. And I think that is part of the shocking part, too, because the community as a whole over the last 18 months, 2 years, was really building momentum, having open discussions about race.
And this was fairly new, right? I mean, I know, Reverend G, you've been talking about these issues for years, but in terms of bringing these discussions of racial disparities in Madison to a citywide audience, that's really been just going on for a couple of years or so, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the work that we're doing with Justified Anger, we're finding reports that were written back in the 40s.
Right.
So they've been there, but people, I think, have been able to push them to the side because they've said, this is Madison, and that data doesn't compute.
I think it was sort of this culmination of the release of the Race to Equity Report, which was quantitative accounts of the well-being of African-Americans versus whites in our county. And then Reverend G's article said, these aren't just numbers. This is really lived experience of African-Americans in the community.
Okay, for people who haven't read the article, can you talk about it a little bit, Reverend G?
Sure. It was an article I wrote for Cap Times 2013, and I just talked about my experience being pulled over by the police in my church parking lot. I talked about mass incarceration at Downtown Rotary, and someone congratulated me afterwards for not being an angry black man. And I said, well, I am. And they continued to insist that I wasn't. And I left that meeting pondering, why was it so important for her to feel that I wasn't angry? I just talked about Wisconsin leading the nation in the incarceration of black men. And then I just started talking about the fact that many African-Americans are not at the decision tables. And when there are discussions about diversity, we're nowhere around, and just really gave my perspective on it. And I think I came out of hiding a bit because I felt that no one wanted to hear a middle class black male bemoan public life in Madison.
So what do we do with the reputation of Madison as being this progressive city? I mean, obviously, it's got all kinds of problems. How do we put these two things together?
Well, the Race Equity Report, which was released in October of 2013, was sort of built upon the shoulders of other reports. And coupled with Reverend G's column and editorial, that sort of recatalyzed the conversation.
It put some numbers on a problem. And we should mention some of those numbers. I mean, they're startling. I mean, you found, for instance, that a quarter of the African-American community was unemployed compared to, what, 5% of Caucasians in Dane
right.
County. In 2012, black adults in Dane County were 8 times more likely to be arrested than white adults. That's stark.
It's extraordinary because when you look at Madison, Dane County, or the state of Wisconsin in the aggregate, we look great. You know, we make the top 10 lists of the best places to live. But when you disaggregate things by race, African-Americans here in Dane County were, on average, doing worse than African-Americans anywhere else in the nation. And I think that because Madison and Dane County has such a good reputation, that many of these issues that people were trying to bring up earlier in the past 3 decades sort of got brushed under the rug because it was in many ways easier to rely on the status quo of Madison's reputation than to address these stark disparities. And I think the other challenge here is that white well-being in terms of education and all these sort of indicators is better than the national average. And so the notion that a rising tide lifts all boats is not taking place here in our community.
And Reverend G, I'm guessing those numbers that the Race to Equity report revealed were not especially surprising to you.
No, because we recognize it and we talk about it. And so what do we do with our reputation? I think we take a hard look at ourselves to find out who we are really, because I think trying to protect an ideal or reputation that really wasn't accurate has hindered us from really becoming a very caring and inclusive and progressive community.
What do we need to talk about?
We need to talk about the systemic issues. If you look at systems or structures in our community that have tried to keep up with the changing demographics, the medical professions have not done that. Professors haven't done it. Media hasn't done it. Police have. That's one department, one workforce that you can look at and say it's really tried to keep up with the changing demographics. Judges haven't. Social workers haven't. So why aren't we attracting people? Why aren't we keeping people? What's really happening in the trenches?
So it does raise the question, why don't we attract a more diverse workforce in all these different professions you've just named?
We often talk about diversity. We don't want diversity in Madison. We want a Jackie Robinson. And that's not diversity. That's having the wherewithal to hit the ball out the park, but the stamina to deal with the name calling and to take your wife on the road with you, to experience all of that. So for a person to come to Madison, it's not just moving geographically, it's breaking the color barrier. You're the only one in your class, in your department, in your office, in your division, and you're the spokesperson. And they want to know why and how. And what they really want to know is, how did you get here and who did you know and what's your background and can I touch
your
hair?
What were your connections that allowed you to get here?
Connections. They're testing you to make sure that it wasn't some giveaway. And you have to deal with all of that and be able to handle it if you really want to be here. Whereas in other settings, you don't have to deal with all of that. Why do you dress that way? Why do you put this on? You know, just there's so many things that aren't cruel. It's not cross burning on your lawn. Just speaking personally, those kinds of offhand comments often said to me, we really see you as different.
So, Reverend G, you've lived in Madison for years. Ever thought about moving away?
All the time.
So why do you stay?
Because I understand the territory, I understand the environment, and I want to be a role model to children and to families who are trying to acclimate themselves to Madison. Madison's given a lot to me. So when I think of leaving, I realize it takes some resolve to make it better for the next family or for the next generation.
And I think, you know, to sort of build on what Reverend G has said, It's not cut and dry. It's actually kind of complicated because Madison provides a myriad of opportunities. And that's why people come. That's why people, white, black, Latino, come to Madison because of the quality of life. The question becomes for us now is, regardless of who you are, do you have equity of opportunity when you in fact arrive?
Sometimes my friends have looked at me in disbelief because they're saying, okay, you're the Huxtable. You're you know, you're the family on Black-ish. Come on, you don't understand disparity. But I see what's happening to people around me. I see people who are sharp and smart, who are struggling. But I think they'd be shocked to know that if my 18-year-old daughter were a son, I probably would have taken other job offers. Hmm. I don't know any African-American moms who aren't afraid for their sons. And not that their sons are going to go to the corner and buy a gun. They're afraid that they're going to be cut from a sports team so that they'll become a part of the subculture of the school and won't worry about eligibility and will start hanging out in front of the schools. And then with the unconscious biases, you see the kid, their skin color, their hair texture, and we automatically make some assumptions.
And I think just to sort of follow up on that, I think we have some unique circumstances here where, because the disparities in poverty, in child poverty, in unemployment are so stark, we have this sort of racialization of poverty because race and poverty or your level of education are so closely correlated in this community because the disparities are so stark and because the African-American community is relatively small. You end up having circumstances where there are lower expectations based upon your skin color.
Hmm. I want to come back to the question of policing. Reverend G, you said earlier that the Madison Police Force is one case where there really has been diversity in the hiring. There are a lot of black police officers, and yet we've just had this this tragedy of the white police officer shooting and killing a young man of mixed race. I mean, we don't know the circumstances yet. We'll still find out about that. And we've also heard that the police force here has taken steps to have racial sensitivity training. I mean, it would seem like this is a police force that has done things right.
I personally think that racial sensitivity needs to go a step further. I just know human nature. I'm a diversity consultant. People are forced to take those things. It's when you hear that it's diversity day, or we're going to have the training, the eyes roll because people feel that they're going to be called racist and they're going to be given information that they don't need. And many people are just thinking, if you don't get in trouble, you don't have to worry about your race. And so the training is offered. But I'd want to ask, how do you measure its efficacy? How do you know that it's taking root? And isn't this evidence that perhaps some of the training that they're taking does not help with the unconscious biases as much as it really should?
Let me end with maybe practical solutions. I mean, if there's one thing in particular that we should do right now as a community, given what has just happened, we've just had this shooting in Madison. You've talked about all of the racial inequities that we have here. What's the one thing that you'd want our community to focus on right now, if there is one thing?
We'd have to focus on still having unity as a goal, to not let this become a huge setback. And that means even though we're having pain or experiencing turmoil, we can't lose all trust in humanity and each other. We can't revert back to 40 or 50 years ago and draw a strong dividing line and just say we can't trust anyone who's white, anyone who wears a badge, anyone who's a kid or wearing a hoodie and is black or of mixed race. I think we have to remind ourselves that this is one officer and this is not all police and this is not all Madisonians. This is one kid. This is not all kids. So I think we have to make sure that we don't lose sight, that we have to live and live together beyond this. And we need to find ways to put ourselves in situations where we have to talk, grieve, and communicate. So putting a strong emphasis in continuing to talk together and live together and not become separated.
With Steve Paulson talking with Reverend Alex G. and Erica Nelson. She's the director of the Race to Equity Project. And by the way, this is the crowd singing Sunday night at a candlelight vigil for Tony Robinson.